Dimitri Martin. He is one of the most innovative stand-up comedians out there. Dimitri grew up in New Jersey. He attended New York University School of Law, but quit with only a year left. The legal profession's loss is the comedy world's gain. He recently released his latest Netflix stand-up special, Dimitri Martin, Dimitri Deconstructed. It is incredible. I'd like to say that Dimitri deconstructed the stand-up comedy special, but he already beat me to it. He takes a lot of creative risks in writing and directing his special. Like, when was the last time you saw a stand-up special with a guest? That's what I thought. And it is laugh-out-loud funny. My favorite part of the special involves Dimitri's use of voiceover that gives the viewer total access into his creative brain. Dimitri joins us now to talk about why he decided to create such a groundbreaking special at this point in his career.
I think people know who I am, more or less, who've been around for a while and following stand-up. So I don't know. I just thought at this point, why don't I try something that's a little bit different, or at least surprise people if I can. It's still doing what I do, you know, I'm telling mostly short jokes and there's some drawings and a little bit of music accompanying some of the comedy. But I thought there's got to be another way to do this. So I thought, number one, I could do something different within a stand-up special. And number two, I could approach stand-up specials a little bit differently by putting three of them together as a trilogy, making it a story that'll unfold.
Huh, okay. You're all done. How do you feel?
It felt very real. Very vivid.
Right.
Just like, it's like I was really doing a special.
Does your mind feel less blocked?
I feel funny. My head is very hot, like almost like it's maybe slightly burnt.
Well, that is normal. The good news is we know what is wrong with you exactly.
Oh.
Your brain is constipated.
You wrote, directed, and starred in the 2016 film Dean, a comedy about tragedy. Would it be fair to say that that was the catalyst for Dimitri Deconstructed?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't thought of it that way. I think maybe they both come from the same source, which is me trying to do something a little harder than what I have done for me. And also, in my way, trying to be a little more autobiographical without turning my stand-up into kind of reportage about my life. I want it to be, I don't know, a translation, I guess you'd say, something translated into fiction, so that it's not just a one for one, like, this is what happened, now let me tell you. More like, hey, I've had some experiences and this is how it informs my perspective, and I want to use that. So when I say fiction, the stand-up part of it is that the trilogy, this narrative that's going to link the three together, is sort of a sci-fi story. So it's based in what's my real experience, but I was like, hey, why don't I have some fun with this and make it a little bit different?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you certainly did that. Can you walk us through your creative process of writing and directing Dimitri Deconstructed?
Sure. You know, what I usually do is I like to daydream a lot, and a lot of my jokes come from that, I'd say, probably way back from the beginning when I started. I have told some stories over the years, you know, some things happen. I think, oh, this is a personal story. It might be kind of fun to tell. Maybe it's worth telling. But I have found, for me, once I've told a story 5, 10, 15, whatever number of times, I get pretty tired of the story and myself, because usually I'm in the story. But with jokes, especially shorter ones, I don't get sick of them so fast. And if I do, I can just drop one out of the set and then it can reappear months later or years later and say, oh, okay, I feel like telling that joke again. And most of the jokes aren't about me. They're more about ideas or a perspective.
Somebody asked me what mansplaining was, and I was like, well, it's nice try. I have no idea. I don't know. But I'm willing to listen.
So, in terms of the process, that's, to me, a much more enjoyable pursuit, because I'm daydreaming, I'm brainstorming, I'm sometimes, you know, jokes will just float into my head. I think that's the sort of normal way, if you want to call it that, for most of the comics I know. It's just like, oh, you know, something comes to you, you write it down. But if I'm getting ready for a stand-up special or a tour, I'm going to record an album or something, then I'm trying to force them out. I'm pushing it. So that's when I I spend more time write, just especially on flights when I'm touring. I bring a spiral notebook and I just write, you know, jokes, and I underline it, and then I just write as many as I can until the plane lands, see what I can come up with. And I have these old typewriters sometimes I use, and that helps me because there's no email to check. There's no distraction. I can just sit with a piece of paper. I don't have to worry about my printer connection, Wi-Fi, nothing. Just put a piece of paper in the typewriter, write the word jokes, and then I get to the next, you know, carriage return. And then again, I just try to write a page of them. For me, that's like each time a blank page is such a fun opportunity to see what I can come up with. Then I thought, what about playing with the edit and the screen itself? Maybe that presents opportunities for telling jokes or tagging jokes, enhancing them, extending them, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. What kind of reaction did you get from Netflix when you told them you wanted to shoot Dmitri Deconstructed in black and white and have all these artful shots?
They were very cool about trusting me and also didn't give me a lot of notes, which I was grateful for. I do think they were curious. And if they were concerned, it didn't get to me. They probably were thinking, what is this guy doing? But I guess maybe one of the benefits of being around for a while is that there are people in the business who are like, okay, we know you try different things and we understand sort of what you're selling. So we'll give you a shot here and we'll see how it comes out. And then once they saw the first cut of it, they were, I think, relieved, but mostly very positive and happy about it and said, wow, this is really watchable, which I took as a big compliment, because they said, you know, other people have tried to do more experimental things with their stand-up and it's not always so watchable. It's you can end up losing the audience. So for me, that was one of the goals, was can I make it different but not lose people?
Yeah, and you did that. Mission accomplished.
Thanks.
Well, thank you for doing it. Well, you did all the heavy lifting. One of the highlights in your special is when you invite a guest on stage. Can you tell us a bit about the guest you chose and why you chose him?
Yes. When I toured leading up to the special to prepare for it, I tried a lot of different things. And that's one of the nice things about being out on the road, because it's kind of like a live laboratory. The audience is an amazing feedback machine that tells you in real time that's working or that's not working. If you have enough audiences, you get a more precise sense of, okay, I think this one's a good bet, this joke or this bit. One of the bits was having a guest, and that came out of wondering if I could use a large pad on an easel in a different way, because I've shown a lot of drawings over the years in my stand-up shows. I thought, is there another way to use this thing? And I thought, oh, I could make sort of a character on the pad. And then maybe I could have that character talk, maybe have a conversation with this character, sort of come to life. And so that's what I did. And people ended up liking it a lot. So I thought, oh, I'll put that in the special. And it's this sort of demon character I came up with. Sure.
So is the idea that you're trying to sort of advance in your job? Like, will you move up if you do well?
You move down. It's the opposite direction because it's hell. So you go deeper into hell.
I see. So you don't get promoted.
No, you get demoted. You got it.
Okay, cool.
Right now I have a dessert fork.
You have a dessert fork?
Yeah, you start with a dessert fork, then you get a salad fork, then a dinner fork, then a serving fork, and eventually you get a pitchfork if you get demoted far enough.
I see.
But the dessert fork is good. You can stab people in the eyes with it, gouge their eye out, you know, stuff like that.
Oh. I don't know, there's just this fever pitch of anger and politics and all that stuff. So I thought it would be an interesting time for a demon to show up and talk about their contribution to the world and stuff. Nothing religious, it's nothing like that, but I just thought it was a funny angle maybe on the time we live in without being topical. It's not really my bag.
Yeah, it's a very funny. I'm so glad you did that. Yeah. One critic has said that your comedy has become weirder in the form instead of the content. Do you agree with that?
Ah, that's interesting. Yeah, I guess. I don't know how weird I could make my content and still have it work with the crowds that I get. So I'm always tethered to the responses I'm getting from the audience. Without pandering to people, I also, at the same time, you know, want people to laugh when they come to my shows. So I try things that go a little too far out, and it just gets a little too quiet for my taste. So I think, you know, people bought tickets, they maybe got a babysitter. They had to pay for parking. I get to try my stuff, but I do feel like I owe the audience a good show. What I'm trying to do is say, okay, this is a filmed event. This exists in a rectangle. So you're watching it on a screen of some size. How can I acknowledge that and use that? And how can I create jokes that didn't happen live and can't happen live? Usually it feels like a liability because it is a live form. And as soon as you film it, you're now removed. You're not with that live audience. It's almost like this handicap or liability or something. But I thought, well, what if I could make that a strength?
Right. I really liked the Mysteries of the Unknown segment. It has this cool Twilight Zone-ish vibe to it.
A boy plays tic-tac-toe at the very same moment on the other side of the world. While eating a tic-tac, another boy stubs his toe.
What inspired this portion of your special?
This was because on the road, I don't usually play with lights or music cues too much. I usually keep it really simple and say, this is the lighting look for the show. It's all self-contained, so I can show up anywhere and do my sound check and say, I want this sort of lighting look. And if I ever do have sound cues, I usually control them from the stage so I can just get my timing right and stuff. But for that, I thought, this would be kind of fun. It's just a simple lighting shift, makes it a little more theatrical. And then that was really fun. It was sort of fun business to figure out because, again, there are other ways to get laughs or to do jokes that aren't just verbal. It's not just like, okay, this is the sentence and here's the punchline and here's another one, or here's a story and here's a twist or whatever. But it's more like, this is like how the person moves on stage. And, you know, it's a little more physical, a little more theatrical. That was just kind of out of trial and error.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you had some really, all the jokes throughout the special were great, but I thought during that, the Mysteries of the Unknown segment, you really had some really great jokes and you had some nice, you had a nice 1-2 punch, you'd have a follow-up to the previous joke. It was incredibly well done and very funny. My favorite thing about Dimitri Deconstructed was your use of voiceover to give your audience a real sense of what it's like being Dimitri Martin. Why did you decide to do that?
Yeah, that speaks to that screen relationship or that viewer to performer relationship that's different when you're on a screen than when you're live, because you can not only get in tighter depending on your coverage, which I think is interesting comedically, because now we can get a lot closer. You know, it's a surprise sometimes. It's like suddenly we're in tight. But then once you are closer, you can also auditorily be a lot closer. So close that you can kind of go into the performer's head with a voiceover if you can pull it off.
How about a joke that's more topical? How does that joke go?
It's harder these days to even get people's attention, to let them know you're even doing this.
No.
It's hard to get people's attention. You know, I'm kind of a quieter guy. And
that's not right.
Especially, it's like you can't grab people's attention.
Nah.
It's really hard to get people's attention these days. I just
forget it. You know what?
That's an example of a joke that won't be in the special.
I used it sparingly, but I think it worked pretty well. It's kind of a simulation of the experience of being on stage. And especially if you've told jokes so many times and done this show X number of times, you get accustomed to it and you try to keep it fresh and be really present. But, you know, it's just how the human mind works. Sometimes your mind wanders and you're telling a joke, but you're thinking about, oh, crap, what time is my flight tomorrow? You know, stuff like that. I didn't meander too much with the voiceover. There were earlier cuts where I was doing some more weird stuff, but it was just like going off on a tangent. And then I do think I was like losing the flow of the show. But I felt like I got a good balance where it's like, cool, this is a fun device that is another way to tell some jokes and add a certain intimacy in the performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was great. You used just the right amount of voiceover. And I thought throughout your special, you had excellent EFP, energy, flow, and pace.
Ah, I haven't heard that. That's cool, EFP. I like that.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Yeah, it comes from CBC when I was working at CBC that they were big on energy, flow, and pace. And the other big catchphrase they like to use is broadening the oral landscape.
Wow.
So, yeah. Cool. How are you going to top Dimitri Deconstructed?
Oh,
I knew I shouldn't have asked that question. What a doofus.
Ah, I'm excited. So I shot the second special in the trilogy about a month ago, and the crowd was great. That was a bigger room. So this first one, Dimitri Deconstructed, I shot in a smaller room, and I was trying to do this more intimate experience, and I got to shoot more shows so I could get the coverage and do a lot of the stuff that I did. The second one, my plan is, like I said, it'll be in color, and you're going to get more of the story. Why was the first one in black and white? What's going on with him? What's the whole story here? The second one is sort of the meat of the story. So I'm going to have these portions that aren't live is my plan, so that you see a live special or filmed live, and then you get to sort of leave it and come back. So that'll present some fun challenges in terms of EFP, so that I don't I don't put the brakes on the live stand-up, because I don't want to ruin it. I'm not trying to make a movie or a sketch show or something. It is a stand-up special, so I'm always just trying to get the right amount now. That's the new game. How much can I fiddle with it without ruining the integrity of a stand-up special and have it recognized as such? But I think I can do it. This is the next challenge.
Yeah. Dimitri Martin, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on Dimitri Deconstructed. It's a very funny, very surreal, and very original comedy special. Thank you for making it. And thank you, as always, for the great EFP.
Thanks so much for having me and for your time. And I really appreciate the feedback. It might sound funny, but ultimately, especially when you put something out like this, it's not like doing a live show. So when people tell me they like it, it means a lot to me.
Dimitri Martin is a comedian, writer, actor, and the man behind the Netflix special, Dimitri Martin, Dimitri Deconstructed. Find out more about Dimitri and Dimitri Deconstructed at WPR.org/beta.
It was like doing 8 hours of intense therapy a day, every day for 8 years. It was a lot. Imagine addressing all of your baggage all at once.
Coming up, Priyanka Matu joins us to talk about her debut memoir, Bird Milk and Mosquito Bones. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.